How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to sit down.
Okay.
So I have two, it has been requested that I ask you about your search and rescue experience.
Oh.
Do you want to talk about what you did for search and rescue and how you got started in that?
Sure. Search and rescue started back in 1990 when a Clackamas County Sheriff's Office came to my Jeep club and asked for volunteers to go through training and become a four-wheel drive search group. And they were desperate need. They didn't have any equipment. Search and rescue was kind of new to them. They were getting more and more people lost in the snow and in the woods, and on the back road. So they wanted a crew to be able to go out and search for these people. So about 20 husbands, wives, members of the Jolly Jeepers went through, I think it was a 3 or 4 weekend training and got certified in search and rescue. We went on, oh, two, three, four major searches, and then things just went real cold. They weren't calling us. And so for the next 10 years, from 1995 to about 2005, we were not being called at all. I don't know what happened at their level that they were not, we were not participating. So many of the most, almost all the members of the group kind of gave up and quit.
So what part of what were you doing first? I mean, you weren't hiking in the forest looking for you personally.
No, what our mission was to go on the service roads, the Forest Service roads, and look for people. A lot of times people would get stranded out in their cars in the snow, or in an area or a hunter, and many of them would walk out to a road. And so we would search the roads to find these people that were missing, and do any kind of transportation that they needed. It was in 2005 when they came back to our group again, the Sheriff's Department asked us again if we would put together a four-wheel drive group. And we said yes, we would. And we had about, again, about 15 members that went through training and got their certification. And then they joined us a Mountain Wave Search and Rescue, which was one of the highly recognized search and rescue groups in the nation. But they were majorly only dealing with communications, being able to talk back and forth with searchers and the police, kind of a go between the sheriff's department and the searchers who had radios. And so they asked us to join with their group, and we did, because their group was getting pretty small. So we all trained and learned how to use radios and
So originally the sheriff's department themselves approached the Jeepers directly,
yes.
but then later that sort of fizzled out, and then Mountain Wave approached you guys.
No, the sheriff's department again approached us to start a new one 10 years later.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then they approached us and said, why don't you join up with this other group that we need them, and they don't have a lot of volunteers right now anymore. So we did join with them, and they were down to probably 10 people. And we joined them with 15 people. So now we were 25 people, which was more manageable to go on missions.
Because I remember you had Mountain Wave on the side of your Jeep for a while, right?
Yes, from 2005 till 2019, I was a member of the Mountain Wave Search and Rescue. And that group grew over those next 15 years. It grew to have not only communications, four-wheel drive, snowmobile, drone. We had quads and oh, dog. We joined up with a dog group joined up with us, and we had 11 dogs to go out on searches. So we were becoming a very big group. We had 110 people.
Wow. Paramedics,
nurses, a couple doctors, just people like myself, teachers, people that just worked in the blue collar field, that had any kind of interest in the outdoors and in search and rescue went through regular training on doing these searches. And then in 2019, the Sheriff's Department made a major change. The head of the Sheriff's Department, the sheriff, he decided that he didn't want all these different search and rescue groups, because there was our group, which did communications, four wheels drive, dogs, and so on. Then there was another group that did not from our group, but another search and rescue group that did ground searches, bicycles, and white water.
Oh, wow.
You had the mountain one, like Mountain Rescue, Portland Mountain Rescue, which did all mountain rescues. And
so they had teams especially dedicated to what type of rescue it was going to be.
Yeah, so we had different groups. Well, the sheriff wanted, he was having problems putting all these groups under one umbrella. And so he decided to only take the elite from each group and try to form a sheriff's group. Well, it didn't work out. They're back to all these different groups again. He got millions of dollars from the state,
sure,
to buy new equipment, hire new officers. And that's, to me, that was his motive in doing it. At that time, I had retired. I got to the point where at 67 years old, 68 years old, I was having a hard time getting up at 11, 12 o'clock at night.
Sure.
Go drive 2, 3, 4 hours to to a search place, and then search for 2, 3 hours, then come home at who knows when. And it was without sleep and stuff. I just couldn't do it anymore. So I retired from it.
So what did you, you had that whole trailer that you would pull behind your Jeep, right?
I did have a trailer.
What was on that? I'm trying to remember.
Well, I had it set up to carry my overnight equipment if I needed to stay overnight. I had a mast that went up, and I could put a antenna on the top of that.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
For better communications. I carried water in that. I carried extra fuel. It was a very small trailer, but it carried some different things. Equipment that I might have to use out on a search.
Would you say your focus on search and rescue was communications?
That would be my second focus. My first focus was four-wheel drive. Going up in the snow or muddy, or rainy, muddy area and dealing with that. But we did a little bit of everything. We did evacuations for forest fires. I did that twice. We did communications at different places on different searches, and then we did the four-wheel drive. We did transportation, things like that for the ground groups. If the ground groups had to start their search 5 miles away, we'd drive them to their starting area and pick them up and stuff for those things. So we were a support group for other groups too.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Well, as someone who had search and rescue called in when their kid got lost on the mountain, I appreciate everything you did, because, yeah, that's a thankless job, I imagine.
Well, it can be, yes. And I did call a few people on that search.
Oh, my goodness.
To find what's going on. I did call our mountain our search and rescue mountain wave to find out, because he, our leader in that group, knows everybody. And he was able to give me some pretty good information on how the search was going and progressing with Gabe. And it is astonishing how so many people we find are so tired, lost, wet, hungry. And here Gabe did everything right.
Yeah.
And he greets them with a dance almost, you know.
Yes, right.
Would you like to join me for dinner, you know, type thing. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
I would have called you to go up there if you had lived closer. I mean, we got the call, and I think we just kind of panicked. And me and one other dad who was here in town just drove up as quick as we could because, yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, it was a little far away, that one, but we've done those before.
You know? Yeah.
We've gone in there, and we were part of helping out Clark County, which is Vancouver area. And our group did searches throughout the Northwest. So we had people who traveled to Northern California, all through Oregon, dogs teams that went up to that town that had the mudslide cover it. We had dog teams go there, cadaver dogs and things go there and help out there. So we've been around. Our group had done searches in the Northwest. If they would have asked, our group would have been gone up there, but it would have been a Gabe would have been staying till morning.
when I talked to the search and rescue guy, he was like, don't worry about it. People get lost here all the time. I am almost positive I know exactly where he is. He told me, he's like, I gave my team 2 hours to find him. And like at, you know, 1 hour and 48 minutes, like they got the call on the radio. We found him. He was right where we thought he was going to be. So I was like, oh, well, I'm glad you are really confident about this because I was ready to... Yeah, I was pulling out my hair. So, but hey, it all worked out. It's all in the past, and Gabe has a great story, I suppose. So,
that's right.
Well, let's talk about COVID because you just got COVID. What? I mean, has it even been 3 weeks now?
Oh, it's been about a month now.
A month. So, I mean, I only know. I mean, I know a lot of people that have had COVID, but you, of all the people, I think definitely got hit the hardest. So. Let me tell you what I heard, and then you can correct me.
Sure.
So you were up fishing. So we went to the family reunion, right? And then you got back, and you went fishing in Alaska like less than a week later, right?
Yes.
And you got COVID on the way. No, you got COVID while you were up there.
Yes.
Like towards the end of the trip, you started having symptoms?
Right at the beginning.
Oh, okay. So were you zonked out and resting while you were on this fishing trip?
Well, we flew up to Alaska on a Wednesday, and Thursday morning was our trip on the going out fishing. So Thursday morning I was fine. The doctor had given me a strong patch to put behind my ear for seasickness, and water wasn't that bad, so. But I did. I put it behind my ear and you know, the patch, and we went out and we did our fishing and caught our fish, and we came in that night. And the next morning, went out to breakfast and went out to lunch. And then after lunch, we went back to our house that we were staying in, and that's when the fever and the chills hit me, and I just felt terrible. Now, I thought it was a reaction to the seasickness patch that I put
on. Sure, yeah.
Because he said it was pretty powerful, and that here are some of the symptoms that you might get. And some of them were there, and I'm going, oh. And so I took the patch off, but it didn't get any better. And all I wanted to do was sleep.
So what sort of symptoms were you having?
I couldn't eat or drink. It bothered my stomach, my upper GI.
So like even drinking water?
Yeah, I really just had to sip, just a sip or two, and then I couldn't drink any more than that. So I forced myself to drink about every 15, 20 minutes, drink a little sip. Mm-hmm. I know the dehydration can get you, so I was trying to avoid that. I didn't want to eat at all. I didn't eat for 2 days up there. After I started feeling sick, I didn't eat all Thursday, Friday, or Saturday.
So are you just at some Airbnb while all this is happening, or what?
Well, we had rented a house,
okay,
to stay in Homer, and then we had to make a 5-hour drive back to Anchorage, and I just sat in the back seat and slept pretty much the whole way. I couldn't open my eyes, just concentrate on my stomach, not, you know.
Did you think you had COVID at this point?
At that point, really, no. I really, you know, kind of. I'm sure it was in the back of my mind. But still, I was working on that, you know, I'm having a reaction to the patch. And then Sunday, I started feeling better. And so enough to, I woke up in the morning, I got a shower, and I was able to, I was still tired, extremely tired. But we went to the airport on Sunday and flew back to Portland. I got home here and I didn't look real good, I guess. Lynn said, you're taking a COVID test. So she gave me a COVID test and it was positive.
Oh, so you didn't know before you flew back?
No.
Angie said you double masked on the airplane on the way back. Is that true?
Yes.
So you were cautious. You didn't know you had it, but you were careful about at least coming. You weren't reckless is what I'm getting at.
Correct.
Okay, so you get back. So Lynn says you need to take a COVID test because you look like hell. You take the test and it comes back positive.
Right.
Okay,
now,
so,
but I'm feeling Monday, the next day, I'm feeling like I'm on the rebound. And the doctor, we called the doctor, and the doctor, we talked to him about taking the pills that you could take.
Okay.
But because I was on the fifth day already, in a 5-day window,
sure.
We decided, probably me, decided, well, I'm not going to take the pills because I'm feeling better and it's already the fifth day. So I'm not going to take the pills.
Okay.
So I did not take them. And on Tuesday, things started getting worse again. And I still couldn't eat, couldn't drink very much. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I slept.
So you're sleeping. So at this point, you're back in town and you've called Angie and I and said, hey, I have COVID. And then I think Angie had been, we had been checking in on you probably early. And all we got out of you was, I don't feel good and I'm sleeping 12 hours a day. So are you just sleeping most of the day trying not to die?
Yes.
Okay. So what?
And I'm in fog. I was in a total mental fog. I didn't know what day it was. I just couldn't concentrate on anything. Lynn would ask me a question and it would take me, you know, 5 minutes to answer it. And I'd give her a wrong, not even an answer close to what she was asking.
Hmm.
I was just in this fog. And finally, she said that you need to go to the hospital. That was on Saturday. I hadn't eaten for a week now.
Yeah, so that was going to be my question, was that because we were hearing that you were not feeling good and sleeping for 12 hours for like an entire week. And I think Angie was like, you need to go to urgent care, but you weren't going. So from the outside looking in, I'm like, that's just your dad being stubborn because he doesn't want to admit that he's sick. Is that what was going on?
Have you ever been to urgent care?
I've been to so many hospitals, you don't even know.
Yeah. Well, those waiting rooms, you don't even want to be in them.
Yeah.
I had called the nurses for Kaiser, and they kept giving me for something for my stomach. It didn't work at all. I was able to eat probably a bowl of soup a day. That's all I had. And finally, it just got to the point where I was pretty weak and still in this fog. And we did go to urgent care on Saturday.
On Monday.
No.
Yes.
It was a long time. It was a solid week before you went to the doctor because Angie and I kept looking at each other going, what's John doing?
Well, they found out when I got to urgent care that my oxygen level was down to 88. So they put me on oxygen. Now, if it gets down to 85, I hear, they put you on a ventilator.
So whose idea was it to go to the hospital, yours or Lynn's?
Probably Lynn's.
No, we called the advice nurse.
Oh, we called the advice nurse, and the advice nurse told us we needed to go now.
Okay, so it wasn't like Lynn dragged you out of the house and you didn't want to go.
Jump kicking and screaming, yeah.
Well, that's what we were trying to figure out. We're like, is John just trying to be tough and not admit that he's not sick or what? Okay. All right, so you go to the hospital.
And go to urgent care. And we walked in there. There's a sign that says, we're closed because we got too many people. Well, I wasn't putting up with that. So I went right up to the counter and said, look, the nurse told me to come here. I'm here. And they took me in. And they started running some tests on me and found that my oxygen level was too low to send me home. So they put me on oxygen, and she said, you need to go to emergency. Now they move us after 2 hours in urgent care.
Mm-hmm.
They send us over the next building to the emergency room. And there we sat with about 50, 60 sick people. All coughing, barf bags, you name it.
Right.
And we sit there for, actually, we didn't have to sit there very long. They got me in. They took my vitals and stuff. Then they called me in. They gave me an EKG. They gave me a chest x-ray. And then they took my blood. And then we sat down for 4 hours. After going through that for an hour, then we just sat there for 4 hours, and it was almost midnight, 11 o'clock, my oxygen bottle ran out. So I went up to the counter. I told the guy, I said, I need another oxygen. When are they going to call me in, number one? I'm sure everybody was asking that question.
Sure.
And I said, I need more oxygen. If they're not going to give me it, I'm going home. And right then, someone walked out and called my name. So we went in the back. They took more tests, a few more tests. They gave me some medicine for my stomach, which made me feel much better. And
like anti-nausea, you mean?
Well, it was a cocktail of several things.
Okay.
And it made my stomach feel better, so I was able to eat something. They gave me, I got some Jell-O, and they put me in another little room, and that's when Lynn went home. And because they said that I was going to be sent upstairs in a few minutes. Well, that few minutes lasted almost an hour. But they did come and get me and take me upstairs and keep me overnight. And then...
Is that all the longer you were in the hospital? Was just one night?
One night. Well, it wasn't even one night. From 2 o'clock in the morning is when I got into my room. And they woke me up every hour. But, I mean, they got me up and moving at 8 o'clock in the morning. 6 hours later, and
you were out by noon.
And I was out by noon and back home by noon.
So you're okay. Did they
$8,000 for that?
They diagnosed you. They said you had COVID pneumonia, is what I heard. Is that right?
Yes, I had COVID pneumonia. I had low oxygen. They were worried about my blood because I have something going on with my blood that gives me too much iron in my blood. So they were worried about it too. So they sent me home and ordered a home, what do they call it? Home health care, where by the time I got here, they transported me in a van.
Lynn didn't bring you home?
No. They told her to go home and wait for all these people to show up. So the first people to show up are these people that are setting up a iPad and phone communication and Zoom communication and oxygen. People were there with bottles of oxygen, and they already had my meds coming. They had all sorts of things going on by the time I got there. And so when I get there, they checked all my vitals. And they all left. And then I got on and talked to a doctor. And so then brought another paramedic in to take all my vitals. So I had a paramedic show up at 8 o'clock in the morning and at 6 o'clock at night to check my vitals. And a doctor visit on Zoom in between.
Do you think that they did that because the hospital was full and they didn't have a bed for you?
No, it's a new program that was actually started in 2018.
Huh.
That they were, it's cheaper to send people home with this type of care for most people.
Really?
And to keep them in the hospital. I say this, my 8 hours in the hospital, 10 hours in the hospital costs $8,000. So if they can send you home and have all these people show up, drive up and spend 20 minutes.
Right.
Is much cheaper than staying in the hospital.
Huh, that doesn't seem like it'd be cheaper to me, but hey, whatever works, I guess.
Yeah, they order meals for you too, and they have meals delivered.
So wait. So you come home from the hospital, they have a paramedic or whoever visit you twice a day.
Right.
You have oxygen at your house.
Yep.
And they're sending meals to your house?
Well, they're supposed to. They didn't, but they were supposed to.
But still.
That's true. They did eventually. I got them in the freezer, in their refrigerator. So I had to get a shot twice a day for blood thinners so that the blood clots don't build up and go to your lungs. Don't form and go to your lungs. So I had to have a shot twice a day, and they do that, or in our case, Lynn did it for me. She gave me the shot instead of having them come at super early in the morning, because you have to have them 12 hours apart. Have them come at 6 o'clock in the morning so you can do it at 6 o'clock at night. So,
gotcha.
And then did it 12 hours later. She gave me it again. So
after you get home, do you start feeling better now that you have this medicine?
Yes, once my stomach started feeling better, I was starting to eat and drink, and I was feeling better. My oxygen level went up to normal, fairly normal, 93, which is 93 to 100 is
sure.
Is anything over 90 to 100 is good. By Thursday, I was feeling much better. And so we went on Friday, we did it, and then they released me Saturday morning. I think Friday I wasn't even on oxygen anymore. I think I just had oxygen Tuesday night, Wednesday, and then Thursday afternoon I took it off. I didn't need it anymore. And with the doctor's permission, of course. I was talking to at least one doctor a day. And so I didn't need that anymore. And my temperature was normal. I was eating, feeling pretty good, just weak, still in a fog, still had the cough from the COVID pneumonia.
This is a solid week and a half or 2 weeks after it started?
2 weeks.
It was a long time.
Seemed like forever.
We were definitely worried about you because it was like it had been a week and you were still not feeling better. And we're like, wait a minute, like this is longer than it's supposed to be. I mean, you were completely down and out for a solid week. And then you went to the hospital and we're like, man, what's going on?
Yeah, it was a little scary. And if I had not had my booster, my shots and my booster, it could have been really bad.
Oh, I don't know. I heard the whole thing's all fake, John.
That's what I've heard, too.
Yeah.
Both guys I went to Alaska with came down with it on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yes. And they got the pills right away that day and took those pills. And they were done by 3 days later. They were fine.
Do you know what pills? What was it? Do you know?
Yeah.
Paxlovid.
So, wow, that's crazy. So maybe your experience would have been different if you had taken those pills earlier, you think?
If I would have gotten them right off the bat, it might have helped me. Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know. That's it hits they say it hits everybody differently. And
now
I consider myself a pretty healthy guy.
Yeah.
I don't get sick hardly at all. So for it to hit me that hard, it was a little scary.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, I know a lot of people that have had it. I mean, a lot of people get it and, you know, they get a runny nose or it's no big deal. Or you get other people that get it and they're down for, you know, 24 hours feeling like they've got the flu. And then here I am talking to you and you are basically completely down and out for a long time. So,
mine didn't feel like the flu at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
I never wanted to really throw up, you know, per se. My aches, and I didn't really have a lot of aches and pains. The flu, you get back aches and joints. I really didn't have a lot of aches and pains. I just couldn't eat and tired. The fatigue was terrible.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're sleeping for 12 hours a day for an entire week, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad you're feeling better. Like I said, we were all definitely worried about you because it was kind of crazy, and it seemed like it lasted longer than most people. So,
yeah, but it was 3 weeks, 2 weeks, I guess, when I took the test again, and I was good.
But so, you're back to, would you say you're 100%?
No, I would say I'm probably 95 to 97%. I still get a fatigue. After doing things.
Sure.
I have my that COVID cough, and they say that's probably going to stay with me anywhere from 1 to 2 months.
Okay.
And that is annoying.
Yes. I have a coworker who's got a cough that does. Yes, I feel you.
Very, very annoying. Not just for me, but for everybody has to be around me too. You know, listen to me hack, you know, and stuff. So,
but you're mostly back to normal. So that's good. Yeah.
Now, my cousin Nancy has it, and her husband Bob has it.
I heard that. Yeah, I was just talking to George about that. Oh, yeah, that's right, because you guys came over to our house last weekend, and you looked like you were feeling much better. So
yes, yeah. I hope Bob doesn't have it. He has a lot of the same symptoms that I had.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm hoping that he doesn't get it like I did. So.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm running out of time on Zoom. It's going to kick us off here. So I do have a scheduled recording with George this weekend to talk about him crashing your dad's car.
Yeah.
Since I'm going to have a captive audience, is there anything else you want me to ask him while I've got him on the phone, or any details you want me to flesh out?
No.
Okay.
I mean, nope.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk to him this weekend, and I think I'm going to talk to Karen and Liz this weekend too, so that'll be good. So, cool.
Good. Okay.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to tell that story, because, like I said, I've known a lot of people that had COVID, but nobody quite as serious as you, so it's interesting to hear it from the inside, so to speak.
Well, definitely don't want it again.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll be getting more boosters.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to go figure out where Roland is and maybe play a game with him, but tell Lynn I said hello, and you guys have a great evening.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you later, John.
Bye.
Bye.